going on and, you know, left unchecked, for instance. And today it's Gaza. Tomorrow it could be anywhere. It could be, you know, when war turns it, a blind eyes to oppression, it sets a dangerous precedent, you
Absolutely.
Know, that
yeah.
allows inhumanity to spread. And the loss of innocent lives, children, doctors, youth, people, engineers, like, you know, like Sabrine, is not just a loss for Palestine, but for humanity, for as a whole. You know, these are not the people who shape the future.
Absolutely. And we're going to come back to that, Fatima, just to remind our viewers, you are watching Women of Resistance, where we highlight the plight of women who were subjected to a genocide in Gaza. Let's move to a more personal story of yours, Fatima. You are a Palestinian. Mm-hmm. Every Palestinian has got their own story, you know. Tell us about your Palestinian story and the work you do.
Well, I'm a filmmaker. I'm a Palestinian of origin and British citizen. I'm a filmmaker. I'm an activist. I am a survivor. I am you name it, you know, a journalist, and I've been through all what Sabrine's actually been through. I was born and grew up in exile in the refugee camp, the infamous refugee camp in Lebanon called Sabra and Shatila. I witnessed the massacre that happened in September 1982 there. I lost part of my family in the camp. I was forced when I was a child to walk on the dead bodies, you know, when I was, you know, very young, to see all of this atrocity and forced and used as a human shield, you know, in the camp in order the Israelis to get into the camp. However, that did not stop me. The same as Sabrine said, this is not like going to hold us, but it's going to encourage us. It may, you know, delay us to achieve our hope and our dream. But still, actually, we will do it. Sabrine's case, she went to the university after 18 years of, you know, of staying,
marriage,
you know, looking after her family.
Yeah.
This is amazing, you know. She kept this dream. She kept this resistance and strength. And that where every Palestinian has this encouragement, because we need to create our future. We need to reach our dream, and that's what it is.
Fatima, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm wondering. It's amazing, and we have seen this repeatedly. This resilience and strength, you know. But sometimes, when you've been through, for example, what you say about, you know, walking over dead bodies, this breaks the strongest of people. Sometimes, you know, mental health issues, it stops you from, you know, achieving more. But we don't see that in you, Palestinians. We just see it fueling more and more, you know, spirit of resistance. How do you do it?
We do it actually because we don't have, when you are in this situation, you don't have time to think about it. You need to do it. You need to go for it. You need to keep going. Otherwise, it's gonna break you. And that's why the strength, the strength, the commitment, you know, the belief, the resistance is our weapon to keep going on and to keep our life live, basically, to continue and to go forward and look for the future.
That's
It held you back. Yes, to get your dream, but that does not stop you. You know, it keeps you going. Otherwise, it will break you.
Because there is no other option than to fight for the freedom of Palestine.
There is no other option, and we don't. You have to be unbreakable.
Yeah.
That is the issue. That's the most important for us.
Absolutely. Now, how do we help, you know, like women who are in Gaza at the moment in the condition of Sabrine, for example? We see that, for example, she's got this GoFundMe, account, but she's saying it's not doing too well. People are not really donating money. But you see a lot of, you know, people want to help out. Do you think it's the trust factor of donating online? What really is it?
Well, it's quite a lot of combination. First of all is, you know, the holding of the, you know, the power of the occupation is affecting our the contribution for the people and the mistrust. Of course, sometimes they try to break you. They try not to allow you to get any fund. Mm. But also, it's not just this. It's about you know, women need support, especially the Palestinians. Through organization, they need a contribute organization that dedicate to aiding Palestinian women, not just, you know, keeping them struggling and struggling and going on like that. Mm-hmm. You need a plan for this, and you need an organization, an institution that can adopt these people, like Sabrine, like me, because we are struggling even to do some films nowadays because of the lack of fund, the lack of credibility and trust. We need advocate. We need education for girls and women as well in our culture and our community.
Yeah.
The problem is we have a lot of, as I said, a lot of preventing us. Some of them is like, you know, amplifying, like, you know, we need amplifying the voice of women as well.
Absolutely.
This is very important. Yeah. But also be in mind, occupation is making it really difficult as well.
Yes.
I'm going to give an example about a lady who was, you know, recently killed in her house in France. She's a journalist. She's a filmmaker. She was doing a film, documentary film about Gaza recently. Her name is Marine Fedhovich. And she was found in her house.
Absolutely.
Time
I mean, Fatima, the struggles of the Palestinian women are manifold. There is threats everywhere. But honestly, I have to end this by saying to you, you know, hats off to you, women of Palestine.
Thank you.
And on that, thank you so much for joining us. We leave you with the sounds of Palestine by the artist Saif. Goodbye.
In the limelight. New China tariffs against the United States will go into effect on 10th of April. Stock markets worldwide careened even lower on Friday, 4th of April, after China matched President Donald Trump's big raise in tariffs. We take a look at the global media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Fox News Channel has covered this story and tells us more. China announced on Friday, 4th of April, it will impose 34% tariffs on the United States, just days after President Donald Trump unveiled the same amount against Beijing under his reciprocal tariff plan. The new China tariffs against the United States will go into effect on 10th of April, according to the Wall Street Journal. Donald Trump wrote on his Truth Social platform on Friday, 4th of April, China played it wrong, They panicked, the one thing they cannot afford to do. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Guo Jiakun, said the U.S. announced tariff hikes on imports from many countries, including China, under the pretext of reciprocity. This gravely violates World Trade Organization WTO rules and undermines the rules-based multilateral trading system. The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Guo Jiakun added, China firmly rejects this and will do what is necessary to defend our legitimate rights and interests. We have emphasized more than once that trade and tariff wars have no winners. Protectionism leads nowhere. We urge the United States to stop doing the wrong thing and resolve trade differences with China and other countries through consultations with equality, respect, and mutual benefit. The 34% tariffs announced against China on Wednesday come in addition to the 20% tariffs already imposed against the country by the Trump administration. Representative Jeff Van Drew, Republican of New Jersey, told Fox Business Channel, "We knew this was going to be a little bit bumpy in the beginning, but let's understand what it's all about. It's about fairness. It's about America first and not America last. We have been getting the short end of the stick for years, and it's important that Americans understand this. These are reciprocal tariffs. We have been tariffed. Our goods are tariffed. We're always at the unfair disadvantage with these countries, so it's going to be a little bumpy. They're going to cry. They're going to yell," he added. "I spoke to President Trump personally yesterday. He was telling me that already countries are coming to him saying, let's work this out. We can make a fair deal. We can do better. We will do better. Everybody just hold on a little bit. Be a little bit strong. Wall Street will come back. But this is also about Main Street. This is about making things in America." President Trump touted his sweeping tariff plan at a Make America Wealthy Again event, arguing that it will restore the American dream and bolster jobs for U.S. workers. American steel workers, auto workers, farmers, and skilled craftsmen. We have a lot of them here with us today. They really suffered gravely. They watched in anguish as foreign leaders have stolen our jobs. Foreign cheaters have ransacked our factories, and foreign scavengers have torn apart our once beautiful American dream. We had an American dream that you don't hear so much about these days. You did 4 years ago, and you are now, but you don't too often. But now it's our turn to prosper, and in doing so, use trillions and trillions of dollars to reduce our taxes and pay down our national debt. President Trump added, "And it will all happen very quickly. With today's action, we're finally going to be able to make America great again, greater than ever before. Jobs and factories will come roaring back into our country, and you'll see it happening already. We will supercharge our domestic industrial base." The trade announcements have sparked uncertainty about the cost of goods to Americans, which White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt brushed aside on Tuesday at a press conference, arguing the tariff plan is going to work. The American newspaper The Wall Street Journal has also covered President Trump's latest tariffs and how international markets have reacted. A sharp rise in trade war intensity sent Wall Street spiraling on Friday, 4th of April, pushing the Nasdaq index into a bear market, denoting a 20% decline from its peak. China's decision to apply a 34% levy to all imported goods from the United States next Thursday, 10th of April, after President Donald Trump's tariffs go into effect, rattled international markets in part because it further deflated hopes that a global settlement could be reached soon. Further hitting sentiment, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, said the U.S. economy was more likely to face a period of higher prices and weaker growth than seemed possible a few weeks ago, because of larger than anticipated tariff hikes. The Standard & Poor's 500 index dropped 6%, the Nasdaq slid 5.8%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 2,231 points. The carnage was widespread, with 14 Standard & Poor's 500 stocks rising for the day and 28 dropping 10% or more. The market-wide toll from a two-day tariff rout surged to a record $6.6 trillion. The torrent of selling late this week shows investors coming to grips with the grim implications of the standoff. The levies announced late on Wednesday were deeper and more aggressive than the business world had expected. Retaliation stands to intensify the economic effects of the policies, which could reduce consumer income and slow economic growth. Now investors are bracing for further conflict, none of which is likely to improve the outlook for the global economy or corporate profits, the strongest driver of stock prices. Even as President Trump left the door open to making deals, he vowed new tariffs on drugs and microchips. Investors took little comfort from Donald Trump's stated willingness to negotiate. J.P. Morgan Chase analyst on Thursday boasted that their odds on a global recession has now increased to 60%. President Trump remained unbowed, saying that now is a great time to get rich and that China played it wrong. They panicked. The Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, acknowledged that markets are crashing, but said economies weren't and that global businesses would adjust to the new environment. Investors drew little solace from an unexpectedly strong jobs report that showed the economy added 228,000 jobs last month, giving little sign that uncertainty ahead of the tariff rollout had derailed the labor market. On Friday, 4th of April, major U.S. indices opened sharply lower before staging a modest recovery late in the morning after President Trump said Vietnam's leader wants to cut its tariffs to zero. Another mild rally pushed prices off their lows later on in the day. Overseas markets took fresh hits, with European stocks tumbling more than 4%. Traders have ramped up bets on interest rate cuts this year, figuring the U.S. Federal Reserve will have to shore up the economy. Oil prices slid further, with benchmark U.S. crude falling to about $62 a barrel, its lowest level since 2021. Investors rushed into the treasuries, pushing 10-year yields well below 4% before they drifted back up late on Friday. Bonds in other big economies, including Japan, Germany, and Britain, also rallied. Bond yields fell as prices rose. The U.S. dollar, which fell sharply on Thursday, 3rd of April, rebounded somewhat, but remains near its weakest levels of the year.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
علم فقه از علوم شریفه اسلامی است و Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program, Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Donishman. Please stay tuned.
قسم امام حسین قسم دنیا رو بگردی مثل خواهر گیر نمی.
I swear by Allah and Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam that nothing in the world can be compared to visiting our brothers or sisters. Also, nothing is worthier more than respecting our parents. See how much respect was between Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and Hazrat Abul Fazl Abbas. You might have heard the story of a man who served young Abu al-Fazl Abbas with grapes, but he refused to eat until he went to his imam, Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, so that he might first eat the grapes and then he can eat. This is how much respect was between these two brothers.
سید الشهدا شب عاشورا از سید الشهدا به زینب کبرا میفهمد زینبم داداشتو دعا کن تو نماز شب التماس دعا.
In another occasion we see that how much respect Imam al-Hussein had for his sister Hazrat Zainab al-Kubra. He was an infallible imam, but he asked his sister to pray for him during her prayers. Thus we as Muslims must act like our role models, namely Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and Lady Zainab al-Kubra. If we have any brother or sister, we must respect them. Their du'as for us will be fulfilled easier and faster even than our own du'as for ourselves. As a result, we must never cut our ties with our brothers, sisters, mothers and fathers, and even our close relatives. Visiting our family members has so many blessings. Thank you very much, dear listeners of Arab English Radio, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Donishman. To find more about this program and our other programs, please visit our new website at iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
the limelight.
During the 1948 war, Zionist regime forces committed more than 30 documented massacres in Palestine. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "It is important to know the origins of the Israeli lobby to realize the significant sway it has had on American politics and the politicians. For that, we have to go back in time to post-World War II history to begin to correct the injustices that generations of Palestinians have faced and to become a society that can live with its conscience. The story of Palestine and its people must be told. After the Second World War, the United States made the decision to tie its destiny to the ethno-nationalist settler colonial regime of Israel. And since then, the Palestinian people have stood alone in their struggle. The establishment of the fabricated regime of Israel was a violent process that has never ended. Beginning in 1947, Zionist paramilitary forces launched large-scale attacks on Palestinian towns and villages, leading ultimately to the Nakba, the catastrophe, the culminating stage of the Zionist ethnic cleansing project. During the Nakba, 531 Palestinian towns and villages were destroyed. 15,000 Palestinians were murdered. 800,000 were forcibly driven from their homeland to the West Bank, Gaza Strip, and to neighboring Arab countries, and 70 massacres were committed. Before Israel's declaration of statehood on May 14, 1948, Zionist militias had committed numerous massacres whose histories have largely been suppressed. Baldat Asheikh, on December 31, 1947, 70 Palestinians massacred. Sa'sa on February 14th in 1948. 16 houses and their inhabitants blown up. Deir Yassin on April 9th in 1948. 107 were killed, including scores of children, women and elders. Some victims were found maimed, raped, and then killed. Masses of men were put on trucks and paraded across Al-Quds before being taken to a quarry to be executed. These atrocities were committed by Irgun and Stern gangs led by Menachem Begin and Yitzhak Shamir, respectively, who would later become prime ministers of the fabricated regime of Israel. And Abu Shusha on May 13th in 1948. Despite efforts of residents to protect their homes, the village fell to occupation. 60 Palestinians massacred. During the 1948 war, Zionist regime forces committed more than 30 documented massacres in Palestine. Israeli regime military historian Yuri Milstein has suggested that there were more than 100. In ensuing years, Israel continued its campaigns of forced displacement and massacres. Notably, it was Ribia massacre of October 14, 1953, that gave birth to what would become the most powerful pro-Israel lobby in the United States. Born in the blood of the natives of Palestine, the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, has spared no efforts to ensure that Israel's ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians be kept hidden from the American people. It is important to know the origins of the Israeli lobby to realize the significant sway it has had on American politics and politicians. For that, we have to go back in time to post-World War II history. Harry S. Truman is president of the United States regime and running for re-election with few prospects and little support until the Israeli lobby literally enters the campaign in the person of Abraham Feinberg, a hosiery manufacturing magnate. And the rest, as they say, is history, Israeli history. The man who made Truman's 1948 election victory possible explained how it was done in an interview conducted in 1973 for the Harry S. Truman Library. Oral history interview with Abraham Feinberg. He stated in the interview that without Truman, Israel would have had very difficult days and times trying to even come into existence. Israel's American enforcers faced challenges during the Eisenhower years from an administration inclined toward a more nuanced policy. During the president's first year in office, news of the massacre in the Palestinian village of Gibeah sparked widespread disapproval. Time magazine, for example, carried the story describing how Israeli regime troops shot every man, woman, and child they could find, then turned their fire on the cattle, reporting also that soldiers were seen slouching in the doorways of Palestinian homes, smoking and joking. 66 people were killed that night, 45 were blown up in their homes that had been dynamited by soldiers. The New York Times ran excerpts from the United Nations Mixed Armistice Commission in charge of the 1949 truce, deploring the act as cold-blooded murder and refuting Israeli lies about the assault. Israel's defenders quickly gathered for damage control. Isaiah L. Kennan, founder of the American Zionist Committee for Public Affairs, AZCPA, the forerunner of AIPAC, wrote of the ill effect it would have on what he called our propaganda. To manage the Gibeah fallout and to prepare for future cover-ups, Kennan created AZCPA in 1954. Under his leadership, the group grew stronger and richer when it joined with the new Conference of Presidents of the Major American Jewish Organizations, an association of top Jewish leaders who promoted Israel's interests with U.S. politicians that included presidents and secretaries of state. Influencers like Abraham Feinberg and Kennan were instrumental in selling Israel to Americans and influencing policies favoring Israel. By the time Kennan died in 1988, AIPAC had gained an outsized role in shaping U.S. policy in the West Asia region. Over the years, AIPAC has demonstrated that nothing will diminish its vested interests in Israel, including genocide. Since October 7, 2023, the death and destruction Israel's defenders have been willing to accept are woefully incomprehensible. For example, 26 days into its bombardment of Gaza, the Zionist regime military had dropped 25,000 tons of bombs, American-made bombs, on 12,000 targets, 50 bombs dropped every hour. By that date, Gaza had been bombarded with the equivalent of two nuclear bombs over an area smaller than Hiroshima in 1945. The Zionist regime has also used banned cluster and white phosphorus munitions that can cause permanent environmental damage. The pain of that destruction was explicit in the words of 61-year-old Gazan farmer Samu Abi Amir, trying to revive a patch of his own productive ground, saying, "It is as if they wanted to kill the land before they killed us." After dropping more than 85,000 tons of toxic bombs on the small enclave for 15 months, it is obvious that Israel intended to poison the soil to make Gaza uninhabitable for survivors. A November 2024 report published by the Environmental Quality Authority, an independent agency established in the 1990s by the Palestinian Authority, concluded that as a result of the bombing, the soil of Gaza has become so polluted with toxic chemicals that it will hinder agriculture for decades. Unable to defeat the Palestinian resistance with bombs and lethal ground forces, the Tel Aviv regime has reimposed a total blockade once again on Gaza, returning to its October 2023 weapon of war, starvation and deprivation. In addition to halting humanitarian aid, the Zionist regime threatened the resistance with additional consequences if they refuse to extend Phase 1 of the January ceasefire agreement and accept its new proposal. It is clear that the Zionist regime has no intention of putting an end to this human catastrophe that has been in the making for over 80 years. There will be no resolution until Palestinians recapture their land, Palestine.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing of our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. Welcome to another enlightening episode of Islamic Upbringing, where we dive deep into the essential aspects of nurturing your youth in line with Islamic teachings. In this program, our discussions are rooted in the guidance of the Holy Quran and the timeless wisdom of Hadith from our beloved Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, and the insightful narratives of our noble Imams. I'm glad to have with us today Brother Muhammad Liaquat Abbas, a research scholar from the Seminary of Qom, who possesses a wealth of knowledge in both Islamic studies as well as psychology. So, Brother Liaquat Abbas, assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Peer pressure. Yes, dear teens, we know you are not always surrounded by positive people, good people, or sometimes come under pressure. And we are here to help you through how you can go with these scenarios. Well, in the previous episode, we reached the conclusion that on that day, people will be crying from the hellfire. Woe to me, I wish I didn't choose this and this particular person as my Khalil, as my friend. So be careful in choosing friends and be careful coming under this pressure because the consequences are very, very bad. And whenever you choose to do something, look at the consequences first. That's just off the previous episode, and we'll continue with the same. Brother Liaquat, again, the stage is all yours.
So, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, when it is said about the verse of the Holy Quran, where a person is going to say, grief be upon me. So he will wish for grief on that day. And the grief is because of choosing so-and-so person and a few friends, example, as a friend in when he was alive in this world or she was alive in this world. So, you know, we, as parents or educators, example, it's a kind of responsibility. I would say it's a wajib responsibility to teach our children, to teach our teens especially, because now that they're going to become baligh, example, or they have passed the stage of bulugh,
right.
They are matured now. And they know what feelings are, example, and they can really distinguish between genders now and they know what are inclinations and everything, right? So, so example, when we tell them about smoking, okay, as parents or educators, when we tell them, you know what, smoking is not allowed, okay? It's really something which I don't accept it to happen. Likewise, I don't accept drinking. Likewise, it's not just me, it's Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it's the Ahlul Bayt, it's the Holy Quran. So if you are drinking, example, you're going against everything, it's haram. The concept of haram should be introduced before itself. Example, the concept of haram should be introduced, I would say, from the childhood itself, you know. What is haram, what is not allowed. And example, it should be taught to the child in a manner that, you know what, this is something bad, and you know, you are such a good person, and you don't like it, you don't like it. You know how we teach the love of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam? We say the child, you know, the Ahlul Bayt are very good, they are they are very nice,
noble,
and they are from Allah,
kind,
you see,
yeah.
We love them. Likewise, how we are teaching love of Ahlul Bayt to our kids, love of the Holy Quran to our kids, likewise we teach what is not allowed as well. You know, alcohol is very bad, those people are very bad, example, you see. And we shouldn't be going to those kind of people, and we shouldn't be listening if they, if someone tells us to, example, go towards it and
a
drink it, example,
thing,
you see.
Yeah.
So when a person gets a list of what a haram, example, and what a haram in today's world are really astonishing, and you know, they are like updated,
right?
Back in our days, example, like when we are when we were children, this internet and this kind of technology was not available.
Yes,
in those days, like haram was something else, okay? It was kind of fantasy, maybe, if a person has to go and commit something haram. But in today's world, haram is very easy to be committed, example, you see,
right? Yeah, yeah. We'll discuss more on that. Let's take a short break here.
Give thanks to Allah for the moon and the stars. Praise Him all day for what is and what was. Take hold of your iman, don't give in to shaitan. Oh, you who believe, please give thanks to Allah. Allahu Ghafoor, Allahu Rahim, Allahu Yuhibbul سينين وخالقنا ورازقنا وهو على كل شيء قدير.
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. Brother Yakut, you said a very important point before going to the break. You said that in today's world, access to haram is so available, it's so out there. And in like, for example, back in our days, it was a fantasy. The things that was, those were fantasies. Our teens today are living those fantasies, actually, and it's really hard to hold back. So yeah, we would want you to give us some strategies so that our teens do not come under this peer pressure. For example, they live in good families, they come from good families, but still the peer pressure is something that sometimes drags you.
Yeah, as parents or educators, example, if we teach them to have patience, just like we teach them to have patience in hardship, if we teach them to have patience if there is a sin in front of us, example, then that will really help us. Just like, you know, of course, we even if we don't use the word patience, okay, if we are just saying you have to get rid of it, you can't go towards it, okay, if we are saying in this manner, it means that, okay, I should be having patience if something is put forward in front of me, like, which is a
right,
sin, okay?
Right.
So, of course, there are different stages and there are different levels of patience according to Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. One of them
right.
is patience when we are confronted with a sin.
When
okay?
you have all the grounds.
When you have all the grounds to commit a sin and you still don't want to commit
right.
it and you are not committing it. And also patience in obligatory acts, example, patience in hardships.
Well,
like
human is a kind of like he gets tempted, and you know, we are made in a way that we get tempted easily.
Yes. Yes.
But it's like even if your heart wants, even if you feel like okay, maybe this will give me some kind of pleasure for some time, I'll get some kind of, you know, entertainment for some time, and I don't know, just get out of stress or other things. But when you say to yourself, okay, calm down on this, and that's actually what we call as patience and sense.
Yes, exactly. And you know what? This thing example is very important to be put forward in the beginning stage itself. Example, you know, the pressure comes on a teen, okay, for a particular sin, and the sin is not yet tasted by this particular teen, okay? If he or she has already tasted, the tendency to commit the sin or to go under pressure increases, is a lot, yeah? But example, if the teen has never ever drank alcohol, I'm just giving a simple example, then the teen might say, I don't want to drink it at all. Why? Because the upbringing has happened in such a manner. You know what? The parents or the educators are like, you know what? Alcohol is haram. You can't drink even a drop of it. You can't even taste it. Tasting a drop of alcohol is also haram. Likewise, if we put forward in this manner, if we put forward in front of our teens all the examples, example, the group of people or the group of teens or group of classmates tell something to be searched on website, on social media, which is not allowed according to Islam. If the educator or the parents know this thing, and like before itself, they create grounds in order that the teen knows the boundaries. So if we don't train our kids, or if we don't do upbringing in such a manner, the teen doesn't know whether this is halal or haram even. He gets pressurized, he commits something.
Maybe
and
I'm
he
getting
gets
into
that,
dark
that kind yes. of kind of I would say desire to commit it once again.
Right.
So it's our responsibility to draw that line before itself.
Right.
So that the teen is not pressurized and is not going to go in that manner.
Right. We'll take a short break and we'll be back in a while.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. Brother Liaqat Abbas is with us. He is telling us the strategies to overcome peer pressure. Yes.
Yes, sister. So another example, what happens is a student is pressurized by peers or classmates to cheat on a test. So with friends insisting that everyone is doing it, so they're going to say, oh, you know what? Only you are not
participating
kind of,
in the cheating.
Yeah, exactly. You're not showing your answers. Everyone else are sharing their answers in this in the examination, yeah, in the examination hall. And it's just one-time thing. Like, just show it for once. Like, it's just for today. I'm not going to ask you anymore. You see, I'm not going to bother you in the next exam because I know it beforehand. It's, for example, it's an easy subject.
Yeah.
But you know, when it comes to that day, again, it's the same thing going on. Again,
yeah.
It's the same cassette or recorder which says, oh, you know what? It's just for today. Show your answers only for today, only for this exam. I promise you, I'm not going to ask. So this is a kind of pressure, again, which is built upon a teen, you see, or a child even. So one thing which we have to, or the student has to remind himself or herself, is about the importance of honesty over here. Number one, importance of honesty. How honest are we towards our examination? And on the other hand, let me tell you very fairly and very frankly, and that is, copying, cheating in examination is haram. According to the fatawa, or according to the rules of Maraji,
yep.
In Islam, example,
yep.
Copying, cheating, showing answers, copying answers, looking at answers, copying them on an answer sheet is haram.
Haram.
Simple.
Act.
Yeah. Be it on an academic level, be it on an Islamic level, be it on whatever level. So copying is haram in examination. So being fair is very important.
Yes.
So you know the boundaries are laid by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala over here. Okay.
Yes.
So if someone is asking us to cross those boundaries, of course our intellect will say no. Simple no. Okay, I don't know the answer. So let me be honest with myself. I have to accept the truth that I'm going to get less marks. Or even if I'm going to fail, I have to accept it. Why? Because I didn't learn properly. I didn't train myself in such a manner that I can write answers in a good manner, you see. So I have to be honest, and honesty is very important. And you know what? Honesty is something which should be taught by our parents, which should be taught by our educators. It's okay. Be honest to yourself, even if you fail in your
exam.
Even
if the consequences are not good.
It's okay. Yeah. At least you are not going to end up in the consequences of the hereafter.
Right.
If you cheat, you're going to get sin and stuff. At least you're not going to go into that extent.
Right.
You're going to just lose a few marks. That's it. You see?
Yeah.
So if
the consequences are going to be small.
Very
and
small.
Right.
And you know, even the parents are going to be like, okay, next time work hard. Like this time it's okay.
Yeah.
But next time. And they are more keen to upon their teen that they progress even more.
Right.
And not fail in the next exam. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. That was all the
Thank
time
you.
We had for today. Dear teens, remember, Surah Zalzal says, we will be rewarded or punished for the acts which are even of the atom size. So be aware of your actions, and be that through pressure or be that any action, be aware of your actions. Thank you for listening. Until another episode, take good care. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Thank you.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
This hour's top headlines. Iran's foreign minister rejects direct negotiations with the U.S., saying Washington's threats to use force against Tehran violate the U.N. Charter. The Israeli military pushes ahead with its genocidal campaign against Palestinians in Gaza, killing and wounding more innocent civilians in the besieged territory. And the Yemeni army carries out a fresh anti-U.S. operation in the Red Sea, targeting an American aircraft carrier and accompanying warships with missiles and drones. Let's go ahead and get started with the stories that matter. Iran's foreign minister has once again rejected direct negotiations with the U.S. after the country's president claimed Tehran wanted direct talks with Washington. Abbas Araghchi said any direct negotiation would be meaningless when the other party constantly threatens to use force in violation of the U.N. Charter. Araghchi, however, said that Iran remains committed to diplomacy and is ready to test the path of